You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Presented by CJMarsRadio.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for December 15th, 2015. And this is episode number 244. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. An exciting week this week as we wind down towards the top two of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2015. And this week's news includes Yowie sightings in Queensland, the return of the Loch Ness Monster, the monthly UFO sighting statistics update from MUFON, the book of the week, and like I just mentioned, the countdown of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2015 continues. And this week we have number 6 and number 5. We're getting there. Only two more weeks until the debut of the number 2 and number 1 stories. And hopefully you'll tune in for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. That whole night is going to be a whole lot of fun. And I'll mention that in a second. But first I want to mention once again, the International Cryptozoology Museum that's located in Portland, Maine, needs your help. The International Cryptozoology Museum will be moving into a new and larger museum space sometime next year. And it's going to be the third time this place has moved, but hopefully this will be the final landing spot for this awesome location. And why am I plugging it? It's because I have a little bit of a stake in this. As my book is for sale there, the Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist can be found and purchased at the International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland, Maine. And they're doing a fundraising campaign, GoFundMe.com /ICM-Africa. And they're looking to raise some money and get that location underway sometime next year. And I donated some money to that, and I got some cool goodies in return. I got a really cool T-shirt for the International Cryptozoology Museum conference next year that takes place early January, actually a couple of weeks away down in Florida. I also got a little print of a cryptid, and I'll share that information a little later on as we go through the Paranormal News inside of the next few weeks. It's going to be crazy. And I got to hold on to some stuff that everything over here. What else is going on? Well, the GoFundMe thing here, the International Cryptozoology Museum. Again, if you donate anything, you'll get something in return. Like I said, I got a nice little print from a cryptid, got a T-shirt, some other goodies. And you can find out what you can get as well if you go to the GoFundMe site, which is up on in the chat room. And I'll also put that up on all the social media. And one other update I have is on the 2016 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, which takes place next year. I know it's a long way away, and I'll probably be talking about it quite a bit between now and then. But it's going to be a fun event. That's why I'm going to talk about it a lot, because it's going to be a lot of fun. May 6th, 7th, and 8th in Farmington, Pennsylvania. One update that I want to share about that, and I shared last week that a new speaker will be at that event, and it'll be none other than Steve Coles, who is an awesome researcher, host of Squatch Detective Radio, and myself, Stan Gordon, will also be the speakers for that event. And there'll also be some workshops interwoven in between the speakers on Saturday, just before a night evening hike from 7 o'clock to whenever. We'll also have a campfire that night with some Bigfoot stories. I can almost smell the campfire smoke right now. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'll post that in the chat room as well. And I'll be posting that link on the Paranormal News Insider for the next few weeks, because it's going to be a fun event. It's going to be a lot of education there's going to be a lot of information shared between myself, Eric Altman, Steve Coles, Stan Gordon, and a lot of other Bigfoot researchers based out of Pennsylvania will be on hand to share all that information. It's going to be 65 miles southeast of Pittsburgh is where Farmington is. So if you live in Maryland, you live in West Virginia, live in Virginia, Ohio, it's a pretty easy location to get to, and the cost is minimal. And one of the updates to this is that they're seeking donations. And the donations are any objects or books or anything that has to do with cryptozoology or specifically Bigfoot. And those items are going to be held at auction. And the auction will benefit Unity, A Journey for Hope, and the Fayette Friends of Animals Animal Shelter located in Fayette, Pennsylvania. So the proceeds after Eric Altman gets all the money for whatever, he's going to divvy up whatever he's not used to pay for this event, because it is expensive to do these things. It is expensive to get this whole entire campground for us. After that money is used up for his expenses, he will be donating the rest divided between these two charities. And I think that's an awesome thing. And my heart goes out to any animal shelter. I just lost my dog a few months ago, and it was a very painful, long drawn out process. And it's animal shelter is where we donated our time and where we ended up getting our dog. So it's a very heartfelt thing for me, and I'm sure I'll be donating some items. I'm not sure what yet. I have a lot of t-shirts, books, and things that I've acquired over the years. So I'm sure I'll be donating something. So if you're interested in that, you can go there and bid on a lot of these items. And what else is going on? Well, the last thing I really want to talk about is what's happening in 2 weeks. Yes, in 2 weeks, we debut the number two and number one paranormal news story here on the Paranormal News Insider, as chosen by myself. But on after that show is going to be another interesting show, as my good friend Dave Considine will be on Paranormalities and Ponderings with host Frank Lee. And guess what? I'll also be jumping in the fray. So you're going to have Dave Considine, who's a lay religious demonologist, and myself, kind of a skeptical anomalous researcher, in the ring, together, on the air. What could possibly go wrong with live radio and two opposing views? Well, we'll find out. 2 weeks from now, on December 29th, Dave Considine and myself will be joining Frank Lee on that show. It's going to be good times, and you never know what could happen. What are we going to be doing? Well, like I said, I'll be talking about the top 10 paranormal news stories. And during the Paranormalities and Pondering show, we will also be discussing things that happened in 2015 and taking a look forward at what we think will be happening in 2016 with two differentiating viewpoints on the paranormal world. It's going to be a lot of fun. So tune in December 29th, 2 weeks from now. And of course, he's on every night, or every Tuesday, I should say, 10 o'clock. I'm sorry, 9 o'clock Eastern. So all this central and different time zone stuff is confusing sometimes. 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Every Tuesday night, an hour after my show ends, you can find Paranormalities and Ponderings with Host Frank Lee. So with that being said, we got a lot to go here during the Paranormalities Insider. We're going to jump into cryptid news for this week. And I've talked about how the news generally kind of is pretty slow in December. Well, I think with the warm temperatures, for some reason, that's my excuse. That's what I'm saying. A lot of stuff is still pumping its way into the news feed for the paranormal news. A lot of strange, obscure things, some things I'm not going to talk about because it's not technically paranormal. And this show is all about the paranormal. And sometimes paranormal news talks about strange things, strange Earth stories or asteroids coming to collide. And sometimes I'll mention that. Sometimes I won't. Depends on what's going on in the news. So what's going on in the news? Well, the Queensland Times in Australia reports that the metropolitan area of Ipswich has become a popular area for Yowie sightings. And if you're not familiar with what a Yowie is basically the Australian version of Bigfoot or Sasquatch. Very similar creature. It's not generally known as tall or heavy. It's generally just like a hairy guy. They're a normal-sized person. Sometimes they are described as a little bit larger, but nonetheless, you can consider it the Australian version of Bigfoot or Sasquatch. And the state of Queensland is in the northeast section of Australia. And the area in question is southwest of Brisbane, which is along the coast of Australia, up there on the northeast side of that huge chunk of land. Now, researchers have reported that the area is a Yowie hotspot, and reports of Yowie sightings have remained consistent over the years. Last year, a pair of Yowie hunters got into a spat over evidence as Jason Heal and Jason Dunn purportedly filmed a Yowie and collected hair evidence. However, Australian Yowie research operated by Dean Harrison stated that the pair is nothing more than court jesters, and they were just hoaxers looking for attention. And you guys think that only the drama happens here in the United States. Well, Harrison claimed earlier this year that he has almost been killed by a Yowie twice in his 20-plus year career studying and searching for the creature. He described the Yowie through a sighting he was researching from a man named Steve Doyle. Doyle described the creature as being of normal height, covered in hair, and made its getaway by getting down on all fours. That's not generally something you hear about with Bigfoot or Sasquatch, as Bigfoot or Sasquatch generally just takes very long leaps and long strides. Doesn't necessarily run away, but takes being 7 or 8 feet tall, a long, fast stride and makes its getaway. But more than one Yowie research sighting I've seen that seems somewhat credible has also described this creature getting down on all fours and running off. Now, they don't have bears like we do, so you can't really say that it was misidentification in that aspect, although they have a lot of other strange animals out there that we don't have here. Now, many researchers of the Yowie also inhabit this part of Australia, and many of them got their start due to their own personal encounters, and this part of Australia is probably the heaviest concentration of Yowie sightings. You can kind of say it would be like California, Washington, Oregon type of concentration of sightings, although Florida and Ohio are also in would be considered the top five states for Yowie sightings, but much more stuff happens there on the east coast of Australia. So we'll keep our eyes out for more Yowie sightings, as it seems like it's kind of peaking over there. The last sighting was just about a month ago, I believe, reported out of there. But reports are a little slow to hit here in the United States, slow for a 24-hour news cycle, that is. And what else is going on? Well, the Loch Ness Monster is back. Well, where did he go? Or where did she go, I should say. A lot of people call it a female. But people think that the Loch Ness Monster is coming back out of retirement or semi-retirement. Now, on the December 8th episode of the Paranormal News Insider, I revealed the number 8 and number 7 stories of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2015. Now, the number 8 story was about the Loch Ness Monster being created by a group of hotel owners in the 1930s to generate tourism for the area. So this should spell the end of one of the top cryptozoological stories of the time, right? Well, not so fast. Gary Campbell, the keeper of the official Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register, states that the sightings in 2015 are at an all-time high. Well, how high? 2015 has the most sightings of the Loch Ness Monster in the past 13 years. 13 years. Wow, that's got to be a lot of sightings, right? And that sounds extraordinary until you find out that there have only been 5 credible sightings of the monster in the Loch. Mr. Campbell states that not all sightings make it into the register. However, those 5 are considered the most credible of those collected. The ones left to the wayside are ones that are easily explainable, or should I say more easily explainable than the other ones that make it into the register. In 2013, there were no sightings of the Loch Ness Monster, and many worried that she had died, even though modern sightings have been occurring for over 80 years. Of the sightings this year, only a pair included photographs or other tangible evidence. One photograph was at an event of a creature undulating in the loch, and she and other 5 other witnesses merely saw a dark mass under the water. The other photograph, taken by American tourist Crystal Ardito, shows a dark, blurry object very far away and was supposedly seen by her for a few brief seconds, and she did not realize what it was until she actually photographed it until later on when she was reviewing her photographs. The grayish object may be a seal, a bird, or even waves, as it was found that it was very windy that day that she took the photograph and had her sighting, or another object that she was unable to see at the time and the distance away that the object was. Well, is the Loch Ness Monster real? Is it still alive, if it is still real? And can the folks around the loch afford to lose her? What does that mean? Well, the tourism generated from the Loch Ness Monster generates around 30 million British pounds annually. Well, that's great information for my British friends, but what about here in America? Well, that translates roughly into $45 million for the area surrounding Loch Ness. That's a lot of income, it's a lot of money, and it's a lot of good reason to keep this mystery and this story alive. So we'll see what happens with the Loch Ness Monster going into 2016. Maybe I'll have some predictions on that. We'll find out. Hopefully she doesn't die off. It's a fun story. It's a fun thing to listen to. It's a fun thing to speculate and talk about with the Loch Ness Monster. And, you know, who knows? Maybe there is something swimming around the loch. I mean, I've talked about it at events over the years about the Loch Ness Monster. And I pretty much kind of bash any idea that it does exist. But, and even with this information about it being fabrication from a bunch of hotel owners getting around and creating this story and creating a backstory, you know, there have been sightings, but are the sightings generated from speculation, from anticipation, and from people just swept up in the folklore? Well, I guess only time will tell what kind of information and what kind of photographs or video or information comes in the future. And I don't think they'll ever stop being sightings of the Loch Ness Monster, as the loch itself is just designed for crazy things to happen. Deer swimming back and forth. There are seals in the loch. There is seiche, which is water swishing back and forth like in your bathtub that creates waves and wake that's unusual. There's logs floating in there. All sorts of stuff that are logical explanations that people will tend to see over time. But there could also be something else down there. We'll find out, hopefully. So now we swing to UFO news and the November MUFON sighting statistics. I know it's a little late in the month, but kind of had to push that off with the countdown going on and other things going. But I was able to secure those numbers, and I want to share those with you. I've been sharing that pretty much all year long. It's grown a little more difficult to obtain these statistics through, and I've had to use different people through MUFON to get the information. But here it is. Now, MUFON is the Mutual UFO Network, and it's one of the largest UFO data collection agencies in the world. And here in the United States, it employs, well, I guess not really employs, lots of volunteers work for MUFON as investigators state to state. There are state directors and different people at various levels that work with MUFON that collect data, collect information, and do investigations. And it is, like I said, one of the largest organizations dedicated to UFO research and investigation in the world. And with their sighting statistics, generally most of them happen here in the United States. A lot of other countries also have their own UFO investigation agencies, and MUFON really isn't popular or well-known outside of the United States. And some of its history has kind of hindered people trusting MUFON because of government funding and different things that they've done in the past. But MUFON has changed a little bit, and I definitely have respect for them and what they do. So January, we're going to jump back to last year. January, 721 worldwide reports. February had 607. March had 684. April, 709. Then things got interesting in May as it jumped to 900. Then in June, it increased even more with the most UFO reports in a single month in MUFON history, with 1,402 reports. with the United States having 1,180 of that, the most of any country. And in July, the increase continued. Well, actually, no, it didn't. It kind of died down a little bit, but it maintained itself with 1,353 reports, with August kind of dying down a little bit more, but still maintaining well above normal numbers. Normal numbers are usually right around 700 reports. And the month of August had 1,143 reports. Still a lot. September, it started to die down again with 985 reports. And let's see, where are we at with October? 992 reports. So it kind of maintained itself in October. And I was kind of curious as to what would happen here in November. And one of the things I mentioned was Hangar 1, which was on History 2, I think it was, that brought a lot of people to MUFON. And MUFON reported that they did see an upswing in case reports, but a lot of those case reports were actually historical. They weren't current ones that were happening in the months that we're talking about here. A lot of these were 20, 30, maybe even 40 years ago, or months prior, or even years prior to the reporting months. So that's why there was a big influx of that. My guess was that it just got the attention of the general public with this Hangar 1 television show, but people within MUFON have stated that a lot of these case reports were historical. They were years old, and people didn't know that there was a place where they could report these sightings. So that's provided some information. And historical sightings aren't just throwaways. I mean, there is some good evidence and good data and good information you can gather from these, especially if a lot of them correlate to each other or show information that shows certain areas are hot spots with that. So now November, what's going on last month? Now, November had a total of 791 worldwide reports. So yes, a big dip after October. Again, October 992. And, you know, before that, it's just kind of slid a little bit with it kind of peaking out there in July. So ever since, it's kind of been dipping. That's a pretty big dip, 791, but it's still above average, which is good. But I guarantee you, December is usually like the worst month because of the weather. However, it's been nice and clear this month. Most of the United States has enjoyed very favorable weather. So we'll see how that has an effect on the sightings next month. Now, the United States, out of the 791 worldwide reports to MUFON, the United States had 642. Again, MUFON is based here in the United States. It's the number one reporting agency here in the U.S., and people are well aware of it. People like me talking about it every week, and reruns of Hangar 1, and MUFON being, again, pretty much the top organization here in the U.S. Canada was second with 41 reports. Not very many reports, but no, they still factored in there. United Kingdom had 24, and Australia had 10. The top state for November was California with 118. Now, California, I've mentioned this before, California typically does lead in the number of sightings only because California is the most populous state. So there are more people living in California. So mathematically speaking, they should have the highest number of sightings per capita, or per person, or because there is higher percentage of people, not per capita. But 118 probably runs in line with some of the other states being of lower numbers, and it would translate to per capita statistics. Florida was second with 42. Texas had 41. Ohio had 29. Pennsylvania, close with 27. Arizona had 24. Washington State had 23. Michigan and Colorado were tied with 22. Georgia and New York had 21 reports each. North Carolina had 16. New Jersey and Virginia had 14. Tennessee and Missouri had 13. Indiana had 11. Alabama, Oklahoma, and Illinois turned in 10. And the remaining states, if I didn't mention yours, sorry, the remaining states had less than 10 reports each. Big thanks to Colorado MUFON and Jan C. Harzan the executive director for MUFON, for the monthly sighting statistics. And I think, you know, it's important that we talk about these things. And it's, you may say, well, what are all these numbers mean? Big deal. Who cares? What does this really have to do with UFOs and UFO sightings? But consistency is key. And when we're looking at these statistics, this will tell you if something is really going on, if anything is out of the ordinary. And it's good to continue to collect these numbers on a month-to-month and year-to-year basis. And MUFON's been doing it far longer than 1 year. They've been doing it for, I think, 6 or 7 years. They've been releasing these numbers. And they have steadily grown. But that's because MUFON has grown as well. And with Hangar 18, again, during the early and mid-season, when the show was really high in popularity and really high in being passed around with the paranormal news outlets and different bloggers and things, that yes, a lot of people did report reports. A lot of people did talk about things that have happened over the years. Again, historical sightings made up a majority of these sightings. And probably if you took those, a lot of those away, the numbers would more than likely be fairly normal. But again, we can draw conclusions from this. And again, obviously, California should lead the number of cases. And Florida, Texas, the one weird thing about this is New York generally is up there in the top three. New York faded down, but I don't think that's because any other state really blew anything out of the water. California, New York, Florida, Texas are generally your top couple of states here. And it was interesting to see Florida in second with 42. No real reason for that influx, but it's curious to see that. So I may have to do some research into wondering why Florida was up there toward the top 10. And with that information, again, if you've been a follower of the Paranormal News Insider for a while, I've always talked about these sightings. And I do think that sighting statistics will mean something in the future, and it's something that we can continue to look at. And it's one thing that I don't normally share through my social media sites, but I do share a lot of other information through those social media sites. I'm really horrible at it, at doing things consistently, and I do go some days, a couple of days at a time without putting stuff on there. But I don't like to inundate people with it. I know some sites do that, and it's a good way to generate people to continuously check out your site and check out your show and things. But I just, maybe I'm old school, I just don't like to bombard people with too much information. I try to keep things down to one post a day. I know last week got a little hectic, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, with the UFO sighting over South Africa. I think I pumped like 3 or 4 posts out through Facebook. But I try not to do that too much. And again, you can find the Paranormal News Insider all over the place. And there's no excuse not to listen to the show, whether live, which I highly recommend, so you can mingle with the chat room, hang out with my producer, and mingle with Dita, my biggest fan out there in the chat room. Frank Lee jumps in there all the time. Some other of my friends jump in there all the time. And again, producer Cindy is out there every single night helping me out with the audio and everything else, sacrificing chickens to the Skype gods when necessary and keeping the show going. And again, you can find more information about my show at paranewsinsider.com. That's the home base of operations, the blog, all the conferences, conventions, contact page. You can find all the social media links you need to find the show, as well as the link to the show so you can listen live. That's the most important thing here. Show's also on social media, on Google+, Paranews Insider, Paranews Insider, at Paranews Insider for the Twitter account, Paranews Insider on Facebook. Find me, and no reason not to find the information to contact me if you have any information about any event, any show, anything, any news thing going on you want me to research and dig information up for. That's what I'm here for. And all my shows are broadcast pretty much immediately after the show's over. You can find information on that show through Mixcloud, and then the next day I post everything on Podbean. I have a Podbean site, pni.podbean.com. All the shows are archived there, and I also do a special thing that's not heard live called the Paranormal News Insider Express, which is a 5-minute or less show that details the paranormal news, but you're not going to get a whole lot of information. It's just basically a condensed version of this show. So check it out. Check out all that social media stuff. And again, you can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern here. And where is that? Well, right here. And just to remind you, you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting out of Youngstown, New York. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And at the top, earlier I mentioned one update with the show. In 2 weeks, I'll be on Frank Lee's Paranormalities and Ponderings with Dave Considine. Dave and I used to be on a show together, co-hosts on a show called The Darkest Hours Late Night, which used to be called The Grand Dark Conspiracy, with host Dan Bouts. Dave and I, Dave pretty much took over the Friday show. I did my Paranormal News Insider every week. And sometimes we joined forces and talk on Fridays, and sometimes the gloves would come off. We had a couple of round tables that Dan had to jump in the middle of, but it's all friendly fun. And again, we're on opposite ends of the spectrum, but we respect each other as researchers. And as Dave and I have always said, we may start out at different ends of the spectrum, but our goals are both the same, to help people through these situations. So we respect each other, and it's still going to be an awesome show. So tune into that 2 weeks from now. And be sure to tune in tonight at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, as Frank Lee talks with Butch Witkowski, director and founder of the UFO Research Center of Pennsylvania, editor of the Journal of Alien Abduction Research, member of the Institute of Frontier Science. Wow, member of all kinds of stuff. He's a former MUFON chief investigator, star team investigator, which I'm highly jealous of, state section director for MUFON, a former law enforcement officer, and he's also a Paranexus Anomalous Research Association consultant and advisor. And I happen to be the executive director of Paranexus, and I highly respect Butch for his information that he's provided at Paranexus, and he's a valued consultant and advisor for Paranexus. So tune into that show an hour after I'm done here, but I'm not done yet. Still got a half hour of information coming your way. And a lot of that's going to be with the top 10 paranormal news stories as we continue with number 6. But real quick, I want to talk about the book of the week. And shame on me, I haven't been able to really jump in and get information read the books that I've been given. There is a couple of fiction books that I've been given. One's by Benjamin Bouts that I'm going to select for the book of the week pretty soon. And another one was given to me by another author. And she is the one that gave me kind of the she asked me the question, do you do fiction on your books of the week? And honestly, I never thought about it. I just look at my huge collection of books here in front of me. And I thought, well, I can talk about these books and provide you with other avenues of research, other avenues of information from the books that I've collected, the books that I've read, the books that I've used for my personal research, so I can help you find new sources of education and information. But when asked that question, I thought about it. You know, there is a lot of good fiction books that are entertaining and do bring kind of a different look on things. And it is entertainment, but sometimes when you read something like this, it does conjure up some other thoughts about the paranormal or other aspects that maybe you didn't think of, or maybe you didn't really want to dig into until you read about it in a book. I know I've read some fiction books that have inspired me to do other things. And I think it's just a dynamic that I need to include here on the show. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'll get some of those books finished. Benjamin Bounces, I need to reread. I haven't read that in a couple of months. And I'll be giving you some more fiction. So if you have a book that you want to hear or want me to basically plug, I'm going to have to read it first. And we can talk about that if you contact me. So any books based on the paranormal, anomalous, anything strange, out of the ordinary, I'm willing to read them and I'm willing to talk about them here. And I have, obviously, as an author myself, self-published all my books. So I know what kind of work it takes to do these kind of things. And any time that anybody can offer any kind of information on my book or help me plug it is awesome. So that being said, the book of the week this week is another oldie but a goodie. And I like oldie but goodie books because they offer you a glimpse of the past. They offer you a different perspective on things based on being released, obviously, before other things happened, other hoaxes or other information was presented. And the book here that I'm going to talk about tonight was first published in 1961. And the impression that I have here is from 1966. It's still a first edition. And I wasn't aware that this book is actually worth some money. I can't even remember where I got this book. But it's called The Loch Ness Monster. And it's published by a man named Tim Dinsdale, who actually died back in December of 1987. Tim Dinsdale was an aeronautical engineer, had a very good career, and he got into the Loch Ness mystery and ended up quitting his job and devoting his life for 27 years to the study and investigation of the Loch Ness Monster. He really believed it was real, and he was very eager to go out there and find evidence to prove it. And with a lot of people with ghosts and different things, it takes a sighting or something for them to really change their direction or get involved. Somebody sees a ghost, or they think they see a ghost, or they encounter something, and they devote their lives to joining a paranormal group and discovering answers. I've met a lot of people like that over the years, and they generally want answers. They want to figure out what's going on with their sightings. And with Tim Dinsdale, he just got the idea of getting into it. And luckily for him, he did have a sighting in 1961. And that sighting was highlighted in his book, The Loch Ness Monster. And this book is really interesting. When I picked it up, I knew who Tim Dinsdale was. I'd heard of him, heard of his research. And I really honestly wasn't sure what kind of information would be in this book. And when I began to read it, began to poke through it, I was blown away by the research done by Tim in this book. There's a lot of photographs, a lot of graphs, a lot of diagrams, and a lot of his research and how he did his research into the Loch Ness Monster. It's a very, very powerful book as far as science is concerned. Again, he did become a true believer in the Loch Ness Monster, so maybe a little bit of his objectivity was clouded with his belief systems. But this book is incredible with the amount of information. And again, you have to remember that this was back in the 1960s. So that information, again, most of the major sightings happened from the 1930s on. So this book is a very good snapshot in time of that era. He was born in 1924, so he was a young man when all these sightings began. So he has a very fresh memory of all this stuff, and very interesting book. And his sighting is on YouTube, and I've just thrown that into the chat room if you want to check that out. That's a film that he filmed in 1961. It's actually, from what I understand, a couple of different films combined. But essentially, this is his major sighting that he had, and you can read about it in his book. And I don't know if there's any of the initial books available, but there is a revised edition here on Amazon, which is my area of choice to provide you information. It's a revised edition from 1976, and most of these books are pretty old, and I like that because the research is a little less tainted by modern times and modern belief systems and people who necessarily aren't hardcore researchers. And Tim Dinsdale was one of the top researchers in Loch Ness Monster history. And being an older book, sometimes they're hard to get a hold of, but never fear, this book is pretty cheap. You can get this on paperback for a penny. And I have the hardcover edition from, again, 1961. It doesn't have a jacket on it, but I don't care. Hardcover editions you can get from $1.59 all the way up to $2,629. Don't pay that much. If you really want it that bad, I'll let you borrow mine. But great information from this book. Tim Dinsdale, again, probably the best research I've ever read on the Loch Ness Monster. So if you're interested in the Loch Ness Monster or just learning how to research aquatic monsters, this is by far the best book I've ever read on such a topic, and it's become a very valuable resource for me in my cryptozoological research. So, the book of the week, again, The Loch Ness Monster from Tim Dinsdale. Now, the top 10 paranormal news stories for 2015 continues with number six. And number six, one of my favorite stories. I'd have to say, honestly, this is my favorite story of the year by far. And I've never wished so much for something to be true. When some other stories came out, I was very skeptical. And this story, I was skeptical from the get-go too. But I'll be honest, when I first saw this video, which the story is surrounding a video, I was so hopeful. I was crossing my fingers and searching the internet every 15 minutes, even at work, looking for updates to find out what was going on with the story. I was very intrigued by this because it kind of came out of left field. Nobody expected a hoax out of this particular avenue of information. So now that I've built up that intensity, what is this story? Well, number six in the top 10 paranormal news stories for 2015, as created by myself, The Insider, here on the Paranormal News Insider, started on March 10th. March 10th, that's a long time ago. A strange video surfaced from the jungles of Costa Rica. Well, this time not of a dinosaur, but of an extinct bird. The video, uploaded only to YouTube, shows an iguana in the foreground and then a strange bird poking around a fallen piece of tree in the background. And I'm going to pause real quick and I'm going to put that video into a nice, I see the cover of the Loch Ness Monster there. I'm going to put the video in the chat room. So if you're in the chat room, see, folks, if you listen live, you can get this information as it's happening. You don't have to wait till later on to look this stuff up yourself. The video was only a 40-second video, and it comes to an end rather quickly. The edited clip shows the bird walking directly in front of the green-tinted scene. A bird appears that closely resembles that of the once-living dodo. The video was purportedly taken by a photographer who had set up video to record animals at night. When I first debuted the story, I stated it would be wise to doubt the video until further information showed up. Now, dodos were first mentioned in 1598 and were slowly hunted to extinction in the mid-1600s and ultimately became a mythological bird. Dodos were only found on the island of Mauritius, which is east of Madagascar in the Indian Ocean. So the biggest question when this video popped up would, how would one end up in Costa Rica? Well, the dodo was used as food, similarly to pigs, which were released on the islands of Mauritius, and the Dutch who controlled the island in that time most certainly took the bird for trade and may have released them on their islands. And other islands such as Costa Rica as a food source. The dodo bird made many people, including myself, extremely hopeful that this video was real and that we could rediscover an animal thought extinct, which again is the cornerstone of cryptozoology. And this bird has been a symbol of this type of work just as much as the coelacanth has, especially for the International Cryptozoology Museum. So the dodo bird, nobody has seen too much information hoaxed about the dodo bird. So we're all very hopeful that this was real. But the video was a bit fishy from the way it was shot to how most of it was in focus, except for what we were hoping to see. Some people felt that this was almost shot in a controlled environment, like an aquarium or just a scene setup. You know, and as much as of a skeptic I was about the video, I still maintained that hope. And a lot of other people were on that same kind of belief system here, that maybe, just maybe, this is the real thing, even though the story, again, sounded quite fishy. And again, I spent a lot of my time researching this and looking for updates, constantly looking for information that would provide me with an update to the story as quickly as possible, not just to tell the world through the Paranormal News Insider, but for my own self. I was really intrigued by the story, and I wanted to find out what was going on once and for all. And sadly, on the morning of March 16th, I found part two of the video. And I'll poke that one quickly here in the chat room here so you guys can get it before I talk about it here. Part two, yes, was very sad because it was a continuation of the first video. It showed the dodo bird move its, toward the end of the video, it showed its beak move off camera and returned with a cue card in its mouth with some Portuguese written on the cue card, which said, which translated to, quote, "I wish I was real," unquote. The video was created for a conservation team, a non-governmental organization known as Civil Association Alternative Terra Azul, that was looking for some attention by using the extinct dodo to draw in the general public and then educate them on living species that are closing in on extinction, such as jaguars, the African elephant, golden lion tamarin, Amazon river dolphin, panda bear, black rhino, hawksbill sea turtle, blue whale, and a lot of other animals. The project was known as Almost a Dodo was the name of it. And it did its job. It got a lot of people looking in on this project. But unfortunately, it really only targeted those of us that were really had our hearts set on proving that the dodo was still alive. And the general public pretty much ignored this story. But it was very viral. And it really caught up the those of us that are into cryptozoology and those of us in the paranormal news really caught us up for that 6 days of excitement. So why did this story hit the top 10? And again, nearly everyone involved with cryptozoology, even zoology and the paranormal was weighing in on this video. It was probably one of the most discussed videos of the year. Many were confident this video was the real deal, despite some of the shortcomings described about the blurry nature of it, as well as the uncommon camera type and placement of the camera. Being low to the ground is not really ideal. And again, the blurriness, some creatures in focus and the creature of choice being blurry close up, although the iguana, when it was close up, was totally in focus. Highly questionable. And I think that's really what drew a lot of us to the conclusion that it was fake. But again, we held out hope. Sadly, the message of this organization seemed to miss its mark, even after drawing a much larger audience than they initially anticipated. Why it's number six? Well, this was an extremely viral video that had many people believing this could be the largest animal finding since the coelacanth. Despite the cheesy nature of the video, as well as the reveal, it has gone down as one of the most believable cryptozoological hoaxes in recent history. And one of the saddest things about this story is that the reveal really got little or no airtime. I know I sent a link in to the Anomalist, and they never even put it on their site. I didn't really see too many people talk about the reveal of the second video. So had there been more discussion or more outrage, the story might have climbed the top 10 paranormal news stories a little more. But again, cryptozoologically speaking, one of the top stories. There is still, let's see, well, two other cryptozoological stories still in the top five. So if you're into cryptozoology and you know of other cryptozoological stories, tune in the next 2 weeks because there's a couple more cryptid stories in store. But what about number five? Yes, we still have number five to talk about. What is that story? Well, it's not one that I'm really proud of, not one that I really completely consider paranormal, but it is based on some paranormal things and concepts. And you may not remember this. This is going to be one of those stories that I'm going to talk about that you may have forgotten about. But as soon as I mention it, you'll say, "Oh, I remember that story," because it was a pretty big deal in the whole paranormal culture of this year. And as we get closer to the number one story, more and more of these stories will be more and more viral, which means people who are just casual fans of the paranormal or listen to paranormal podcasts or just kind of interested in the the topic, but not really dedicated, you're going to remember a lot of these stories. You may not know about the Loch Ness Monster thing, hoax, and all the other things I mentioned that were in the top 10. But as we get closer to number one, you'll recognize more and more of these stories. And a quick recap here. Number 10 story of the top 10 was the real pterosaur spotted over Idaho video, which was on YouTube, that very similar to the dodo video, had a lot of people speculating whether or not this was real, although most people were pretty confident that this was fake. The only weird thing is how viral it became and how there were no real answers about the video. Number 9 was about the Jersey Devil story that debuted on October 12th. It started out with a harmless story and a very silly-looking photograph that just exploded after a video was uploaded the following day. And that story just went beyond viral, went crazy. And number 8 I mentioned already, the Nessie story created for tourism in the early 1900s. That story came out in September 29th. The number 7 story was the floating city in China story that was extremely viral with photographs and videos, people thinking that the world was coming to an end or a parallel universe had opened up in the skies over Jiangxi, China, and city of Foshan. Earlier, crazy stories that had a lot of people caught up in all of that. And the number 6 story I just mentioned, the dodo bird. So the number 5 story this week is the Charlie Challenge. Oh gosh, yes, you may remember that. The Charlie Challenge. How silly and how just awful that thing was, but it was extremely viral. And gravity will hurt you, but not with falling pencils. What started out as a Spanish-speaking schoolyard game morphed into the poor man's, or should I say lazy man's, Ouija board, and a silly little game that seemingly can only work if you put it on your Vine. A 17-year-old girl in central Georgia apparently Instagrammed her game using the hashtag CharlieCharlieChallenge, and from there it gained a lot of momentum. On May 26th, the phrase had been tweeted over 2 million times and was getting more social media attention than any news story event anywhere in the world. The trend stated late on May 23rd and built up on the 24th and went strong for a couple of days. A priest in Philadelphia wrote an open letter to those involved with the cult-like practice where he taught in a Catholic high school, saying there is no such thing as innocently playing with demons. Little did he know, these demons actually work in Hollywood. Well, the whole Charlie Challenge may have started out from trends in South America, where this new version and a couple of older Spanish games were merged together, but it ended up being nothing more than a viral campaign for the movie The Gallows. Now, The Gallows, the main character of the movie, whom it is bad luck to utter his name, is named Charlie. During the movie, as highlighted in a preview, they attempted to contact Charlie by using the exact same method as outlined in the Charlie Challenge. And there's a little link there in the chat room. And why the story is in the top 10? Well, the Charlie Challenge was one of the most viral stories of 2015 on social media, let alone the top stories in the paranormal. Many people were afraid of this, while many others laughed at this as just a simple child's game. Despite the similarities to the Ouija board, which people take, in my opinion, overly serious, but this they just laughed off. It's kind of silly when you think about how fearful most people are. Paranormal groups are deathly afraid of the Ouija board. Yet this Charlie Challenge was merely laughed at. Kind of weird when you think about it. And it's based on very similar concepts, although gravity is the most important thing here at the Charlie Challenge, whereas the ideomotor effect is the most important thing with the Ouija board. Now, the story got the attention of worldwide media well beyond that of social media, and was huge. I mean, this story was huge. It blew away the paranormal news bloggers and things, because this was a worldwide media story. And as I mentioned, this was one of the top trending stories on Twitter for the year, pretty much up until the Paris attacks finally overtook it. But it's still one of the top five events to happen on Twitter this year. So it's a story that was laughable at best to me, but I felt like it had to be included here on the top 10 paranormal news stories because of the viral nature of this story. And why it's only number five, even though it's a huge viral story, it did very little to bring the paranormal out of the dark ages of belief and superstition. While the fear behind the Charlie Challenge finally subsided, it was just another scar in the face of the paranormal belief engine and did little to create acceptance or discovery in the paranormal. Its mere presence on this list is due completely to the viral nature of this story. And again, how do I come up with the top 10 paranormal news stories of the year? Well, I basically take a lot of the top stories, whether I have an affection towards them or not. I just basically put them on the list, and I evaluate each one for how viral it was. I have to look into some statistics. I have to do searches on social media to find out which one was more viral than the others. And kind of going back and looking at the research, where were these stories picked up at? Were they picked up in the same, you know, Huffington Post News or some of these silly news outlets that seemingly carry everything? Or were they more viral than that? Were they on Good Morning America? Were they on CNN? Were they on social media all over the world? Were they, you know, beyond social media and again on public or cable television shows and all this? How much discussion is it getting? How long did the story last? How viral overall were these stories? That's one half of that. The other half is what I mentioned here with the Charlie Challenge. What does it do for the field in which it's related to? This being pretty much the paranormal, or more specifically, the ghost field, with it being related somewhat to the Ouija board. But it also plays off on belief and superstition and folklore. What does this story do for the paranormal? Well, this one did really nothing. So that's why it kind of fell in the ranks to number five. Didn't quite crack the top. Well, it did crack the top five, but not the top four or three. Even though it was probably more viral than a couple of other stories I'll mention next week and the week after, as we count down towards the number one story. But what did these stories bring to the field? That's, to me, that has a little bit more weight than the viralness. But the viralness also means that people have heard of these stories, and they will also relate them to being a little higher in this list of stories. But for me personally, I have to evaluate that for what they're worth to the paranormal. And historically speaking, a lot of the top 10 paranormal stories maybe weren't the most viral, but they had the most impact on the paranormal overall. And as we go through the top 10, maybe next week, we'll see what happens in the paranormal news in the next week, whether or not we talk about the top stories of the last few years. But ultimately, on December 29th, when I cover the top two paranormal news stories, we're pretty much focused the entire episode on those top two stories, as well as the top 10. We'll talk about some stories that didn't quite make it, and I'll also take time to mention some of the top stories since I've been covering the paranormal news since 2008. And we'll talk top three stories from each one of those years and kind of look at how they've impacted and how they've changed over time. But I've selected them, and years later, I realized that maybe they shouldn't have been selected or whatever. But we'll dig more into the top 10 on that debut of the top two, unless there's some really cool news stories going on in the paranormal news, which I kind of hope so, because I like doing the research. I like bringing you these stories. And that's what the show is about. The show isn't just about me talking about events that I'm going to be there at, or things that I'm doing, or shows that I'm involved in. You know, I do like to educate people, and I do like to bring entertainment to this, but I do a lot of research on these stories. I spend a lot of time digging into these stories, but that's what I do. I like to get to the truth And as they say, this poster here on my wall to my right with a UFO, I want to believe. I want to believe in these stories. I may be skeptical, but you have to be skeptical when you're talking about these stories. You have to dig in for that information, for what these stories are all about. And I take that time. I don't just regurgitate information I get from a link off of Unexplained Mysteries or The Anomalist. I get these stories or get this information, and I dig into them. I look for information. I correlate information. And a lot of times I like to give you a little history behind these stories as well, because you've got to fill in the information. And I really feel that it's valuable to take these stories and give them an extra dynamic, and not just to sit here and talk about 20 or 30 stories that happened in the paranormal and just give you a sentence, but to really dig in and really talk about these stories, choosing the top couple of stories and really digging into them. And again, talking about the history and really digging into the research, I think is more important than the quantity. Quality over quantity has always been my mantra. And that's what I do week to week here on the Paranormal News Insider. So again, if you have any information about any paranormal conference or convention, which I haven't really talked about in the last couple of weeks, but as we get closer to January, pretty much after the top 10 is concluded, we'll dig back into those conferences and conventions, and maybe we'll bring a guest or two on to talk about these paranormal conferences and conventions. If you have a book, a fiction book that you want to talk about getting me to read and review here live on the air, and if you know about any story going on in the paranormal or anything anomalous, you'd like to hear it here as well as see it on the website, let me know at insider@paranewsinsider.com. And you can check out the entire list of paranormal conferences and conventions on paranewsinsider.com, my blogs, all my information about what's going on. And I want to thank you for listening to tonight's show. And remember, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Hi, this is Frank Lee, host of the Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show. Here on the WCJV radio network. For well over a year, you've been faithful listeners as we've tried to bring you the best guests that the paranormal has to offer so we can all learn together. So we can provoke thought in the paranormal field. So we can educate you. So we can educate ourselves. So we can all work together to make the paranormal field better by expanding knowledge and sharing our findings, working with paranormal unity. 2014 was a great year when we kicked off. 2015 was excellent as the show grew, and we've seen so many new guests come into the field. But guess what? 2016 is going to be even bigger, even better, because we're expanding our research. We're doing more to bring better guests to you. We're bringing more knowledge to you. And what are your findings? We want to hear about them. We want you to join us in chat. We want you to call in. We want this to be a community effort. Let's all learn together. Let's do our research. Let's read. Let's look at the case studies. There is so much out there to learn and so many questions out there that we still have. Let's make 2016 the year we answer these questions. So be sure you tune in every Tuesday night, 8 Central, 9 Eastern. And let's learn together. Let's make 2016 the best year the paranormal has seen yet. Don't miss out right here on WCJV-DB.com. See you there Tuesday.